This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. Brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association, found on the web at www.nysta.org. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University. And the following is the season summary for the 2012 growing season. Well, the 2012 growing season was among the warmest we've had experienced in 118 years, and we're experiencing historic changes in the climate that will result in us addressing potential causes and mitigating future consequences. In either case, we will adapt as an industry and society. These adaptations must be grounded in good science and thoughtful action. From all of us here at Shortcut, we wish you a joyful and peaceful holiday season. Now, as our seasonal summary and winter prediction from our weather forecaster extraordinaire, Professor Art DiGaetano, director of the Northeast Climate Center here at Cornell University, begins with a review of the temperature for the season. This is the fourth growing season in a row that sets records for either temperature or precipitation. This year, the March to May period was the warmest on record of 118 years, from Minnesota to Maine, south to Arkansas, back east to Virginia. In New York, this led into a top five warmest growing season, March to October, for all areas of New York and New England. Summer itself was only among the top 25 to 30% of warmest summers. The fall then returned to be among the warmest on record for the Northeast from September to November period. Overall, the fast start in the spring kept heat accumulations well above normal, and while the summer was normal, the above average fall kept growing degree day levels high. Clearly, we are seeing a recurring trend over the last 5 to 7 years of significant warming that translates to 3 to 5 weeks of extra growing season. Surprisingly, the first and last average frost day was right on normal, but between those dates was a warm growing season. The precipitation and evapotranspiration summary, a normal start to the season with spring providing average rainfall amounts. Summer was on the dry side, with most areas of the Northeast U.S. among the 25% of driest summers. Fall was slightly above average for rainfall and a surprisingly persistent ET demand well into late September and early October. Overall, though, the year will go down on the dry side of normal. Of course, this would be a welcome state for many of our Midwestern turf managers who struggled through the driest year in weather history and little help from late season storms to refill soil moisture bank for next season. And a winter prediction. It's a pretty safe bet that this winter will not be as warm as last winter's historically warm temperatures. There have been indications from the various models, such as the North Atlantic Oscillation, that it will be colder than normal with average precipitation. There were early signs that we might experience an El Nino winter, often characterized by strong storms and cold temps. However, more recent models suggest a more neutral position. Therefore, there's a better than 60% chance we'll have an average or above average snowfall with moderate to below normal temperatures for the Northeast U.S. Much of the rest of the country will be in the same predictions. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update begins with Walt Nelson's Western New York report. Many soils in the regions are below normal heading into the winter. Damage from sports this fall was significant, however, recovery has been good. We're mindful of crane fly populations this winter and hopes for a very cold open winter that has shown to significantly reduce populations. The Adirondack report from Emily Selick and Lynn Wilson. Snow is on the ground in the Adirondack region by late November, a welcome sign for sure. Most turf managers are indicating they are going into the winter very healthy, looking forward to spring. Many homeowners are asking about tough grass for tough times as the changing weather patterns are wreaking havoc on their lawns. The Eastern Long Island report from Tom Kowalczyk. Our usual discussion of turf irrigation continued into the fall this year with many days where ET was well above normal. It appears that many poorly irrigated lawn areas are the result of both homeowners and landscape professionals not understanding some basic irrigation principles. We considered and discussed the use of soil moisture sensors as a means of improving irrigation efficiency, especially in light of several studies that indicate savings in excess of 65% when using moisture sensors in the landscape. Of course, along with general irrigation topics, Sandy has raised questions about potential saltwater intrusion into existing wells and water supplies. It's imperative to understand the measurement and interpretation of salt content in irrigation water and effect on both plant growth and soil structure. And finally, the Westchester report from Jerry Giordano. Not much talk going on these days as it does not involve tree work and the devastation that was Sandy. It was the second year in a row that a significant weather event capable of damaging trees occurred when the leaves were on the trees. Tree experts agree that once winds exceed 70 miles per hour, you can expect substantial tree damage independent of care or presence of leaves. Our suburban urban landscapes are maturing, and larger trees are a consequence of this maturation. Obviously, even well-maintained trees have been hard hit the past few years. However, there is now great need to properly prune and care for these damaged trees, not only for safety, but also to preserve the important ecosystem services the urban forest provides for stormwater management, dust and noise attenuation, feeling of safety, and temperature modification. And an overview of the entire season with my gazing in the grass summary begins with seed head suppression. A quick start to the spring had most golf turf managers scrambling to determine if this was a quick flash or would it require a change in management plans. In short order, most made their first seed head suppression application, almost all with Proxy Primo. Many followed up a few weeks later with either a second Proxy app or an Embark Primo application. Regardless of the strategy, most had very good to excellent results with seed head suppression, and many are now embarking, quote unquote, on a new strategy for seed head suppression, where the early time application is Proxy Primo, followed by 3 weeks later with an Embark Primo application with minimal injury, good regulation, 6 to 8 weeks of seed head suppression without the downside of potential scalping from persistent proxy use. Repetitive overseeding of scholastic sports turf. Of all the turf sectors, the scholastic sports turf and grounds managers faced the biggest challenge this year with the first full year of managing under the Child Safe Playing Fields Act. Many started the spring under extreme use pressure with the early season start. The most successful managers began overseeding their fields early with play, and this allowed for maintaining turf density in the longest spring outdoor season we've ever seen. There were a few more research publications we discussed this year, and all concluded the same fact. In the face of high traffic and persistent use, repetitive overseeding remains the most important cultural management input, more important than a mountain source of fertilizer, water, mowing, etc. While everyone is focused on reducing and eliminating pesticide use, be sure to have plenty of seed on hand, as it will maintain field safety and turf density, while at the same time suppress weed invasion. A few sports turf statistics. A recent national survey conducted by the University of Missouri Sports Turf Advantage Program of Sports Turf Managers revealed some statistics worthy of reflection this winter. Economically, on average, pro sports facilities manage about 15 acres of land and spend about $4,500 per acre, or a total of $67,500. College universities manage 30 acres and spend about $1,100 per acre, or $33,000. Schools manage 65 acres and spend $650 an acre, or $42,000. And parks manage 130 acres and spend $285 per acre. For field events, including practice games, band, phys ed, etc., soccer fields had 125 events per year, baseball 112, and football 62. When asked about fields, sports turf managers favored sand-based fields to native soil fields 3-1 because of greater resistance to compaction and better playability under wet conditions. The most compliments and criticisms came from coaches. Players offer the most compliments, press the most criticism. Areas of concern nationally for sports turf managers are 1. The status of sports turf facilities at the pro and collegiate levels are light years ahead of most scholastic and municipal facilities. 2. There needs to be recognition by parents, school administrators, and civic leaders of the risk of injury their children face playing under unsafe conditions highlighted in points 1 and 3. There is need for municipalities and schools to provide funds to employ qualified turf managers who could greatly improve the safety and playability of fields. 4. College and universities are placing more emphasis on sports field management. A note about bacterial etiolation. As the golf season got into full swing by early summer, the building heat from the early spring began to take its toll on putting greens that were in less than ideal growing environments, being pressed for speed, dried out too much, and treated with concoctions of a carbon-based compounds loosely characterized as biostimulants. Regular conversations with Rich Buckley at Rutgers University Diagnostic Lab indicated that while hundreds of annual bluegrass greens were failing throughout the Northeast and Midwest, less than 1% were confirmed as being primarily caused by bacterial wilt. During the summer months, articles were published suggesting that a better term might be bacterial etiolation, as this was agreed to be a more descriptive term of the symptomology and potential cause. Regardless of the name, few argued that while important, the bacterial situation was indicative of a golf turf industry that exceeded the biological limits of the plant material they are charged with managing, causing severe stress. From this point, the theories then took over and included implications to regular use of carbon-laden, hormone-infused, amino acid-loaded compounds might be triggering hormonal responses exogenously that is creating the etiolation being observed, and when combined with the stress described above, Bacteria found to be naturally occurring in the plant and soil system then lead to decline. Some panicked and began spraying streptomycin illegally. Others looked for additional excuses. Some just accepted it, licked their wounds, and tried to recover. A slow process, to be sure. If we expect to see these kinds of weather conditions persist in the age of climate change, my advice is, knowing that golfer expectation will not change, begin making plans for regrassing to creeping bent grass and configuring growing environments to give the bent a competitive advantage. And finally, tree leaves, budgets, and passing the burden. Our annual discussion and debate about mulching tree leaves has moved into the public discourse. Communities are debating the need for leaf collection and management of their organic waste. A recent article in the Journal News from Westchester County cited some interesting costs. The city of Yonkers allots 8,000 man hours at a cost of $650,000 per year for leaf collection. Westchester County predicts they could reduce organic waste by 60% and save $6.5 million annually if residents manage their leaves and grass clippings on their property. My good friend Larry Wilson, a leader in the professional landscape community, has been outspoken against such restrictions that further burden professionals and homeowners. Wilson speculates that it would double the time needed per property, creating a time crunch at the end of the season, and then incurring more cost that needs to be passed along to the client. I guess it's true that no matter whether we pay for it from taxes or from our own pocket, someone will incur the cost of managing landscape waste. It seems the municipalities are targeting this as an economically and environmentally sustainable approach. Thank you for joining me for the 2012 season of Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut. This is your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday season, a peaceful and restful winter season, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in 2013.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.